If someone wheeled a mobile printing press up to your hospital bed and asked you to make one last piece of art, would that feel like a gift or an intrusion?
That's a heavy question to start with. I guess it depends on whether you still have something you need to say. We're looking at issue number 74 of the Intersect newsletter, and it's all about these threshold moments where technology shows up at the most vulnerable points in human experience.
We've got astronauts learning photography for a mission no one's done in 50 years, brainwaves becoming visible art, and some really uncomfortable questions about who gets to tell stories when AI enters the picture. Let's get into it. Irish artist John Conway built a mobile printing press that can be wheeled right up to a hospital bedside for someone in palliative care.
Yeah, he worked with a fabricator in Dublin called Spaceforms, and they constructed this whole trolley during a residency focused on palliative care. The whole idea came from realizing that patients wanted to make something, not just say something. A few patients have already used it to produce prints, capturing their thoughts and emotions as they near death.
You know, Jürgen mentioned his own mother died after a sudden stroke and time in hospice, and his perspective on this is really conflicted. He said the machine wouldn't have helped his mother after her stroke, but he appreciated the effort and would want something like that for himself.
That makes total sense. He appreciates the intention, this idea of leaving last little evidence of my own life lived, as he put it. But you also have to consider the potential cruelty if someone can't participate, if they're not actually able to engage with it. It's this incredibly beautiful idea, but it can be so harsh at the same time.
The thing is, well, it makes me think about what we're really trying to capture at those moments. Is it the words, the act of creating, or just proof that we were here?
And there's something about the physicality of it, an actual printing press, not a digital screen, the weight of pressing ink into paper when everything else is becoming less solid.
You know, conversations like this about technology meeting us at our most human moments, that's what The Intersect is all about. Not just tech for tech's sake, but how it changes what it means to be creative, to be present, to make meaning.
If you want more of these stories, the ones that make you think differently about both art and technology, head to theintersect.art and subscribe to the newsletter. Jürgen curates these pieces every week, bringing his background as both an artist and technologist to find stories that matter.
Theintersect.art. That's where you'll find it.
Okay, this one
got me. There's a project called Life Ink that's been turning brainwaves and bodily signals into three-dimensional forms since 1979.
That's really something, especially for that time. This comes from Ars Electronica, and they've always done incredible pioneering work building bridges between disciplines.
Exactly. The technology isn't just measuring brain activity, but it's visualizing those inner processes as actual forms in space. They really see technology not just as a tool, but as an active part of the creative process itself.
And that's the kind of cross-pollination between art and tech that really matters. It completely flips the usual script. Instead of just using technology to make art, it's using artistic visualization to help us understand and engage with technology itself, and even our own internal workings. It's making the invisible visible, making that data human.
Since 1979, though, that's before most people even had computers.
Right? They were already thinking about how to make our internal electrical signals into something we could see and understand. That's vision.
Speaking of who gets to decide what art means, there's this academic paper about the shift from museums as temples of authority to something called communal polyphony.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. It traces audience engagement from street painting performances all the way to the Super Bowl halftime show, specifically the Benito Bowl.
The Benito Bowl? That's Benito Bunny at the Super Bowl, right?
Exactly. And the fact that an academic paper is using that as a serious example of cultural meaning making, that tells you everything about how much has changed. The paper synthesizes theories from people like Stephen E. Well and Ray Oldenburg's third space concepts, and even Pine and Gilmore's experience economy. So it's arguing that the meaning isn't just handed down from the institution anymore, that it's created more by the people experiencing it?
Right. The argument is that meaning making has shifted from institutional authority to communal participation. It's really where the arts have been heading for a while now, no longer dictated by curators who think they know better than everyone else.
It makes sense with today's explosion of content choices. Popular culture creates meaning in people's lives in ways traditional art curation just can't fill anymore.
And it raises interesting questions about bridging that divide between popular culture, as bizarre as it can sometimes be, and the historical timeline of artistic traditions. It's not just that people have more choices now, it's that they get to participate in deciding what matters.
Here's a question. If you're the head of education for an entire country, should you be using AI to generate fake historical images?
That's not even a question, really. I mean, no, but apparently Linda McMahon didn't get that memo. She's been criticized for using artificial intelligence in social media posts that were supposed to be paying homage to female icons in American history. Wait, she didn't even say they were AI generated? She just put them out there? Nope, just posted them like they were real, actual historical photographs. The whole point was to celebrate these women, but instead it turned into this mess because she was presenting them as if they were genuine historical records. We have actual photographs of these women. We have their real stories, their real faces. Why would you?
Because it's easier to hit the generate button than to do actual research, apparently. And that's exactly what Jürgen highlighted in his notes about this. This isn't really about art at all, is it? It's about ethics and institutional authority. When a regular person fails to disclose AI use, they get called out on social media. But when the education secretary does it, that's alarming, especially in a historical context where accuracy matters above all else.
It feels deeply disingenuous. You're trying to educate, but you're starting with a fabrication. It completely undermines the credibility.
It really does. It's a textbook example of how not to use AI, especially from someone who should be setting educational standards for an entire country. It's supposed to be about preserving history, not creating a false one. Picture this. You're floating in a capsule, the moon filling your window, and you've got a camera in your hands. No one's seen this view in 50 years, and it's your job to capture it. That's quite an assignment, and it turns out the Artemis II astronauts were absolutely incredible at it. NASA's photography trainers actually said they went beyond all expectations with their photos.
I find that so interesting because you'd think with everything else astronauts have to master, photography would almost be an afterthought, like just point and shoot, right? But apparently, they had extensive training in composition, framing, and handling that brutal contrast you get in space.
Exactly. And Jürgen, our curator, has a really cool perspective on this because he was a professional photographer himself back in the 80s and 90s in New York, even taught classes. He understands how much goes into seeing a shot, not just taking it.
It's not just point and shoot up there, is it?
No way. You've got pure black shadows next to blinding sunlight, no atmosphere to soften anything, and you can't exactly go back for a reshoot if you mess up the focus or the exposure.
Plus, you're trying to document something for all of humanity while also, you know, not dying in space. The pressure must have been incredible.
Right. But they train them like actual photographers. Composition, depth of field, all of it. And it worked. The images they got are just stunning. They really mastered a very demanding environment.
You know what strikes me about all these stories? Whether it's the printing press at a bedside or a camera pointed at the moon, technology keeps showing up as this witness to things that are almost too big or too intimate for words.
And sometimes it works, like those astronaut photos or brainwaves becoming art. Sometimes it's completely wrong, like faking historical images of real women.
These are the kinds of questions The Intersect tackles every week. If you want to keep thinking about where creativity and technology meet, and sometimes clash, subscribe at theintersect.art.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week with more stories from the intersection of art and technology.